Roger that, Control. Show us a beautiful sight.
Turn your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95BFM. Thanks to Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, Alice.
How are you going this morning?
Oh, pretty good.
Has it been a grey kind of misty morning where you are as well?
I think so. I've hardly looked outside, actually.
Fair enough.
I still had one look and I haven't had a second look outside.
No, it's still early.
Well, if the sun's not shining through, you know, so I'm not drawn outside quite so much.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's been, you know, it's getting cold. It's getting wintry.
It is.
Okay, so we're going to talk about New Zealand reaching space.
Yes, well, this, of course, was the successful launch on Thursday of the Electron rocket by Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab's been around for a good decade or so. They've launched many rockets. Their first one, public launch, was the Artemis 1 in 2009 from Mercury Island. It went up to 100 kilometres in a suborbit of light. It just went up above the line where we can say it's reached space. But since then, Rocket Lab have been developing all sorts of things, and really this launch is the culmination of that development. So they don't just sort of put rockets together. They've done a lot of this from the ground up. This particular rocket, much of it has been done, certainly the engines, with 3D printing. But of course, this isn't 3D printing that we think of. This is a couple of orders of magnitude more technical. It's used metal powder. It's done in a vacuum. And instead of a laser, it's used an electron beam to melt the powder and create the shapes.
Cool.
Yeah, just absolutely amazing. They can make an engine that way in a couple of days.
Wow, that's so interesting.
It's incredible. They've developed new fuels that's not used in this rocket, but in other rockets that they've produced and used. And it's a special fuel that it's a liquid, but it's a very thick liquid, a viscous liquid. And it's got a special property. It's called it's thixotropic, which means if it's given a particular type of stress or shock, it turns very runny. And so you've got a fuel that is sort of almost solid, but not quite, but can be made liquid at will. And so the fuel can be made liquid, so you can turn the rocket engine off, and then you can turn the rocket engine off and then restart it again whenever you feel like it, something you can't do with a solid rocket fuel. But it's more stable than just pure liquid, and it's all just one fuel. It's not, you don't have to mix things together. So, I mean, they've got a whole bunch of developments and patent stuff and stuff in their history leading up to this launch. Another innovation was this particular rocket that went up on Thursday. Normally, to pump the fuel down into the combustion chamber, use a gas generator. So it uses part of the combustion to push a pump that pulls the fuel through. So it's self-propelling, if you like. But that's a very complex, very difficult technology, lots of moving parts, lots of things to go wrong. What Rocket Lab came up with is a battery-powered electric motor.
Cool.
So it gets around all of that complexity and all those moving parts and so on. So they've got great developments with batteries, and there's high-speed electric motors that do the job of much more complex systems than the past. So they've done a whole bunch of stuff to reach this point of being able to get this rocket up into space. I mean, it only flew for 3 minutes. Only the rocket was firing for about over 3 minutes. But in that stage, the first stage, the main booster finished and it separated. The second stage fired. And then at the top of a rocket, where it's always sort of got a pointy shape, that's just fairing. That's just to give it some aerodynamic shape as it's going through the air. But when you're in space, you don't need that. It's just dead weight.
Mm-hmm.
So that is jettisoned. So it went through all those phases successfully, but it didn't reach actual orbit. It got up pretty high. We're not told how high. It's all secret information at this stage. But if they were to go into orbit, they'd need to reach at least 27,000 kilometres an hour. So it's pretty fast. It's over 8 kilometres a second.
Yep.
So what they've got is over 20,000 channels of data from this 3 minutes launch. And so now they're going to spend a lot of time going through all of that data to figure out exactly what went right, what went wrong, what can be fixed, you know, and to work to the next test flight. So there's two more test flights for this year, and so they'll aim to get proper orbit insertion, if not the next flight, then the flight after.
That's so cool. Like, I had, you know, some idea about what they were doing, but I didn't realize sort of the level of innovation that was going on there.
Absolutely. And it's partly through that that they've been able to attract the funding that they have, which includes NASA and the New Zealand government and so on, and private companies. The company itself now is actually majority owned by U.S. interests, and the headquarters is in the U.S., but all this development and the rocketry and so on that we're talking about actually takes place in Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a highly sensitive sort of area, because what they've actually made is a ballistic missile.
Yeah.
Okay, so if someone decided to go rogue,
yeah,
and stick a bomb on the top of this, then you've got a ballistic missile that, you know, could do damage. So a company like this can't just make the stuff and launch it.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount of red tape, accreditation, and all the rest. And the New Zealand government has helped a huge amount with this because hopefully there'll be, you know, a big business payoff. They're aiming for many, many launches a year. They've actually got permission to do a launch every 72 hours for the next 30 years.
Wow.
that's the permission they have at the Mahia Peninsula launch site. Now, to do that would be, you know, pretty amazing, but
that's
you know, but that's the actual permission they have. So fast turnaround, small rockets, payloads. So what they'd send up is something between 150 and a couple of hundred kilograms, anywhere between a 500 kilometer circular orbit that's synchronized with the sun, or a slightly higher orbit that's elliptical. It's not round. So they're aiming for the small satellite market, and see how they go. There's 10 other nations that are launching rockets, and we're number 11.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, so I'm sure there'll be lots of information down the track, but, yeah, everyone's breaking into champagne and looking forward to the next stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you'll keep us updated as they release more information.
I'll do my best.
Okay, moving on. You wanted to talk about a light project.
Yeah, these have just come up in the last day or so, really. In fact, overnight. One is a project for Bright Nights at Auckland Viaduct. It's a project to set up bright coloured light across the front of the harbour, more than 2,000 lights, and it's starting with an event next Friday. I mean, it's $500,000 to put it together. It's going to be right next to the light, so the light will reflect off the water, and it's going to be a permanent fixture, which I'm afraid does worry me, because, you know, the astronomical, scientific and cultural community has been trying to get our night skies darker for many, many years and seem to have made progress with things like street lights, and now there's going to be a huge light down the harbour. So it'll be interesting to see just what effect that really does have. And then the other one is even more grandiose, a $10 million project for the Harbour Bridge, which would be illuminated with 90,000 LED lights and 200 floodlights, which sounds very bright to me. I don't think that is going to be a point. That'll be like special events and so on,
yeah.
Which, you know, is a bit more controlled. But it just seems a little odd to me that when they're talking about that one is going to be solar powered and all these lights are all the latest and efficiency and so on, that's all well and good, but the fact is they're still using up power and they're still putting lots of life into the sky.
Yeah.
I've just sort of caught my eye, those two suddenly popping up in the news overnight. So
no,
I'll keep an eye on that.
It's great to have your perspective because I certainly don't think about light pollution very often when I'm hearing about these things. So it's definitely great to have that other perspective come in.
Well, absolutely. And you know, like our next thing we're going to talk about is the night sky, what people can see. And I can go on and say, well, after sunset, you can see Jupiter in the northeast and you've got Orion setting in the west. And in the morning sky, we've got Saturn still over in the northwest. We've got Venus and Mercury in the northeast. And Matariki's coming up next month. But really, if you're down in the harbour, you're not going to see much of that at all.
Yeah.
And certainly, for anyone to see the Milky Way in Auckland, you've got to be way out in the sticks somewhere. You know, it's just not visible to us. And it's just this creep of bright sky that, you know, we know about it overseas. Huge percentages of the populations overseas in the major centres, they've never seen the Milky Way and they're never going to unless they go out to the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, happening here. So one step forward, two steps back is what it feels like a wee bit. So anyway, if people are out, Matariki will be visible from next month, very, very low down the northeast, and there'll be lots of opportunities, I guess, if people can get up on the little mounts around Auckland to see it. If you're down low, it'd be very difficult because it's so close to the horizon. And if you can't get to see it, then always come along to Stardome. We've got the Matariki Dawn Show, which starts on the 1st of June. It runs for the whole of June, Wednesday to Sunday at 7 p.m. That includes two stories about, first is the creation myth, the Maori creation myth, the Ranganui and Papatuanuku, and there's also the story of Rona and Marama, how the moon got its phases. And in between, there's all the explanation about the importance of Matariki, about the stars themselves, and how the Maori used that cluster to reset their calendar each year.
Excellent. I always think that Matariki is a great time to come along to the Stardome.
Yeah, well, this time it's on for a little longer than last year, so it's the whole of June, the 1st to the 30th. It's $12 for adults, $10 for children, families $40. So tickets can be booked either by phone, 624-1246, or going online to stardome.org.nz and booking online.
Excellent. Well, lovely to talk to you, David.
And to you, Alice.
We'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Look forward to it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Control, we are docked.
That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM. Thanks to Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.